Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Hit Chat Group Chat. We got the whole gang here. We got myself, JP Fashone, Connor Burns. We're all here. JP, how's your day so far?
Good. Yeah, it's been a good week so far. I feel like I've gotten a lot done, which is nice. Some weeks I don't feel like that. So it's always good. It's always good.
Let's go, baby. And Mr. Burnsy, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. It's gonna be a busy month for me. Just in terms of, I got tryouts for one of my summer teams that I gotta run, which fucking sucks. I hate it. It's honestly stupid, but whatever. And then obviously all my other shit. And then I'm moving at the other end of the month, so I gotta start dealing with all that shit. So it's gonna be a busy month, but I'm doing good. Keep it on top of things. So
hey, yo, love to hear it. I actually had a phenomenal day. Woke up pretty early. I had, when was this, 2-3 days ago, one of my athletes that I've worked with for going on, I think we're about to start rocking 3 years here in like March, he has signed to a school, Kaiser University, which is an NAIA down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. 3-4 days ago, he shot me a text and was like, hey, I would really like it if you were able to come to my school signing. And I think it might have been the fastest I've ever replied to a text. I said, yes, 1,000%, I'm there. And I found out it was at 8 a.m. So still went, still showed up, may have been like 5 minutes late, but was really cool. Really cool to see that. I think I was one of the only or few coaches that any of the athletes had like brought out except for their high school. So for me, that's one of those where it's just like that's why we do it. You know what I'm saying? It was just awesome to finally kind of see him put pen to paper. Really good kid. If you guys check out the Hitchhikes Leagues, he's the one that's going to be hitting 90s consecutively off of the curveball machine, which I think he's the only one that's been able to do that in our league. So it's pretty exciting. Ran into a little beefus and, I've had lessons all day. So, been pretty nice. I was able to get caught up on all of my videos, last couple of days from the month of January. Shout out to the ABCA, and then all of the college guys leaving. I wasn't able to be on top of the videos like I would like to be, and so finally got everything caught up on that end. So I'm feeling really good too.
Hell yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. That's like you said. That's kind of why you do it. It's like I feel like you made an impact. It's just a good feeling.
Oh yeah, and this is the third one I've been to. For any coaches who are like, oh, you've only had three guys sign. No, I've worked with like a lot of other guys, but I've only had three kids like personally reach out and say, hey, I would like for you to attend. And I put out this tweet on Twitter, just like kind of talking about like, hey, like, you know, he came up and he's like, I couldn't have done this without you. And his parents were saying the same thing. And I just kind of looked at him and I was like, it's my job to be there. Like, it's not his job to show up every time like he did. Like, it's not, you know, I can do as much as possible, but it takes the kid to be able to be willing to show up. And like I said, like almost 3 years, I don't think the kid's ever canceled a lesson. I don't think he's ever skipped one. The amount of times where he would have lifting, like has a personal instructor lifting, team workout, like something else, school, and then it's like 9 o'clock at night and he's showing up, and it's like not many kids do that. You know what I'm saying? And it's our job to be there, but it takes that special athlete that's willing to, and I've heard it on other podcasts or other stuff called competitive stamina. How able are you able to be competitive over a long period of time? And I feel like that's the hardest thing. As an athlete, is how consistent can I be with my competitiveness? Am I able to stay on top of it as long as I can? And he's done an amazing job. And those are the, you know, like, I don't want, like, it's awesome to get that praise or whatever of like, oh, you helped him, blah, blah, blah. But like, That's not why. You know what I mean? We do the why because of the smile on his face of him signing that letter, not because we made him a better athlete. Like, I would much rather work with a player that decides to quit playing baseball but has felt like I've made a positive impact on their life than to have an athlete that hates life but is just an absolute dog of a hitter. Like, I personally would rather make that bigger impact. And yeah, so it was really cool. This is the third one that I've been invited to. I've had one. I had one last year. I had the one prior before that. And so, I don't know, it was really cool. And I had some past families that I've worked with chime in on my tweet and throw some nice love out there for me. So it was really cool to kind of do that. Today was just an awesome day. And we had beef. We had beef, baby. We had beef.
I think that's the name of the game, though, man. Like, you're almost a lot of times, you know, you're the hitting coach, right? You're the swing coach or whatever, but you're more of, you know, on some days you're the guy's friend, on some days you're the guy's coach, you're his therapist, whatever. And the biggest thing too is first and foremost, for a lot of the athletes we train, it's more of the personal impact. And that foundation, that's the most important. And I think once you get that, that's where you really start to see them excel in baseball, in their swing. You know what I mean? Because if you could easily, you know, Reynolds would go in and not give a fuck about getting to know them, asking them questions, stuff like that, and just kind of give them drills, whatever, right? It's not going to make that same impact of actually until that person, your player, knows that you give a fuck about them. You know, I had like not even close to similar situation, but like little stuff every day. Like, I have one of my 15U kids today. He's coming up to me, and I'm just I kind of let him know. I was like, yeah, I like cooking. You know, I'm a big foodie, and he's like, oh, I love cooking, and just starts scrolling through, showing me all the dishes he's made and stuff. He's telling me all the best restaurants in the area, and like, that's sick, man. Like, I don't know, that shit just makes me happy. It's like I'm actually connecting with him. And then later on, he comes up to me. He's like, hey, you know what? I started making my own overload bat. You know, I'm hitting like 5 times a day now. I'm just like, that's fucking awesome, dude. Like, hell yeah. You know, that's kind of, I think for me at least, like, that's what I do, Like, that's what gives me joy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the baseball's a side project for sure. Yeah. And like you said, like, you get to know them. They get some buy-in. They think like, oh, man, like, you know, this guy actually cares about me and not just like how well I do. They start playing. Like, immediately, like, they're just, like, a little bit more confident, a little bit more, like, self-aware, a little bit more humble, a little bit more reflective, like, all those, like, interpersonal skills that we teach. That has nothing to do with baseball, and then you see they got better at baseball because of those things. And they're going to be better, you know, fathers, sons, husbands going forward, which is, you know, what 99% of the guys we work with are going to end up doing for the rest of their lives more than baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%.
I was thinking about this the other day, and I think it's a little bit of job security. With all the AI stuff going on and different things, I was sitting back and I was like, you know, I could definitely see like almost every single physical or non-physical job go through and just get taken over by robots or AI or this or that. I feel like the two things that are not going to be able to get taken over is like entertainment services. So NFL, MLB, stuff like that. Like, we're not going to want to watch robots do it because they're going to be perfect at everything. And then it's like, all right, we might as well just watch, you know, Madden simulated and stuff like that. But then I was also thinking, all right, so if players are going to be the ones that are going to be having to essentially be the ones, technically you could get replaced by a robot. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. The Louisville Slugger program where I stood on the mat and it said that my ankles were like introverted or something like that, and it brought out a bunch of different drills for me to fix that and stuff like that. But with the way that we also get to know these players personally, right, we find out what makes them tick. We find out their personal experiences, and for me, I try and relate as much to the athlete as humanly possible. And the thing that's really easy for me, like video games, just being able to make everything an analogy of a video game. Some athletes you got to be a little bit harder on. You know, you got to just say it straight to their face, like, hey, you suck right now. You know, little Timmy that's 12 years old or some kid that has is struggling with some self-esteem shit, can't say that. That would break them. So it's like, all right, I feel like that personal touch of who we are as instructors and the relationship that we have with our players is something that if you don't know them personally, you don't know what makes them tick. Like me personally, love you, Dad. My dad was a yeller when coaching. Like he would just get mad, start yelling. And so Finnegan, our coach at Garden City, the first time that I like really messed something up, like really bad, he just laid into me, yelling, screaming, all that good stuff. And because I've been used to that and I'm able to shut down, I was able to go, all right, I've been in this situation before. I know all the right things that he's looking for me to say. So that way we can get this, you know, experience over with. And it was just like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, sir. And then I think after that, he kind of realized like, that's not the guy I need to just yell at because I'm not going to get the response that I'm looking for. I'll get like my point across, but I'm not getting that response. So a lot of times after from that first time, he would still yell at me. I mean, shit, he's not going to not yell at me, but it was in a different manner. It wasn't like, you know, yelling at me to do anything. We became more where he would say something. And then a little bit later on, he would come over and be, this is what I meant by that. This is that. And we would have a conversation. Like for me personally, that made it work. Cause then I'm listening to the words that he's saying, not just looking for the response to get this over. And I feel like you have to have that personal touch. You have to have that personal connection to your athlete to understand, how am I going to get the most out of this individual? How am I going to get the most out of that individual? How am I going to get the most out of that individual? And it might be three completely different things, right? We might, like, I have a kid that's a band kid. So I have to kind of work and talk about some certain things as relative to like band. And I have some other guys that play video games and this and that. And so first off, I think we're safe. Job security. Think it's there. But then secondly, like if you're not personally connecting with your athletes, I feel like you're not going to be able to do the most in your job as needed because you don't know how to address your athletes. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah. And I think it's, I mean, I think first and foremost, you know, when I first started coaching, obviously my brother's my biggest mentor or kind of biggest inspiration for that. Pretty much is like, you got to be your authentic self. You can't bullshit. And kids, especially kids, high school kids, they've got a good bullshit meter, right? It's, you know, being that, but also not being afraid to tell them what the fuck they need to hear, whatever that brutal fact might be, right? Because I feel like there are some coaches who are on the opposite side of they're almost too personal. They try and be your friend, and they're just, you know, they're just telling you everything you want to hear. And then 2 years go by, and it's like, what the hell? I haven't gotten any better, right? Like you got to have that balance of, you know, being, you know, getting to know them, being their buddy, but also being like, hey man, your fucking energy sucks today. Like you got to fucking pick it up. Or dude, you're a half ass in it today. Like let's fucking go. Kind of, you know what I mean? It's gotta be that balance, right? And then also too, again, like the getting to know kids is understanding, who you can push, who you need to be, you know, get some more confidence to, and who you can really get after. I think that's the biggest thing, right? But no, I 100% agree. Also, Finny would explain things to you. I just got yelled at.
You still yell at me. Like I still got some lashings and shit, but instead of it being like just dog and stuff like that, it would be like, figure shit out. Like, what the fuck, round? Blah, blah, blah. And then the next day or something, as I'm walking by his office, he's just like, hey. I walk in, he's like, what the fuck was that? And it was like, oh, well, blah, blah, blah. He's like, I can do that. Like, what are you talking to? Blah, blah, blah. Get the fuck on the field. All right. I run out there, right? So, like, I'm obviously like, he's a really fucking good coach, but that was just like me personally. Like, I got lashing out not too long ago. I just went back. Yep. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, sir.
Like, it's funny because that brought me up. Like, man, I hated that. Yeah, I hated him for like 3/4 of my time at gardening. So I just like, God damn, this guy does not let up. I remember, do you remember? I think it was our first conference series against Cloud. We, game one, I pitched. We won 15-2, went 5 innings, and he was just going through lines like, hey, Reynolds, good job, blah, 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 blah. And he just goes, Burns, you fucking sucked. You gave up 2 runs to the worst team in the conference. And I'm just like, what the fuck, dude? And I remember all week, I'm just like, I'm going to fucking prove this dude wrong. And then I went to Butler, and I struck out 12 complete game shutout. And then some clicked, too. And I was just like, man, this guy doesn't fucking hate me. Like, he's doing that for a reason. He's not letting me get complacent here. And the biggest thing is that it does. They don't ask how. It's just like how, like what, whatever gets it done, gets it done. And for me, that was it. He just would fucking be an asshole to me, and it works. I'd just be like, "Oh fuck you, I'm gonna prove you wrong." But then I was like, "Me doing well is helping him. Obviously, he doesn't fucking hate me. Like Jesus Christ."
And it's helping them. Like you, it's helping. Yeah. Just knowing your athlete, and that's special, man.
Know your dogs. Just gotta know your dogs.
That was fucking. God damn it, that was I still remember that. Just I was like, what the hell, dude? Like, come on.
Like you said, Rose, like if the goal of a coach is to get the most out of your athlete, right? Like performance wise, team wise, like building a community and building that team atmosphere, like you want to get the most out of every single athlete. I don't think it's gonna come to a surprise to anybody that's ever done anything athletic. That your mental and emotional state will affect your physical performance drastically. You're not going to play. Some guys just don't play well mad. Some guys play really good when they're mad. Some guys play really good when they're happy. Some guys need to feel like kind of numb to everything, just kind of go through the motions. Like the more you can like know your dogs and train the animals essentially to be in the right state of mind mentally and emotionally, like when they get to that point, the better off the whole team's gonna be. We read a book when I was doing my education degree, and it was like How to Train Your Dog. It was just a dog training book, and
it's a good book.
It's a great book. And you know, I got the book and I was just like, what are we doing? Like I'm training humans. Like why are we reading a dog training book? But like everything is exactly the same. Like you're trying to teach them routines. You're trying to teach them behaviors. You're trying to teach them like when to do things, when not to do things. And the big point of the book was just like, you have to know your dog. Like every dog's going to be a little bit different. You have to train a little bit different. It's the same thing with athletes. Like if you really want to get the most out of them, you got to know how they operate and how they function and how to get them to the right state of mind. When they go to perform.
I like it. You guys know who Trevor Moad is?
I don't.
Oh, he's unfortunately passed away, I think, this last year, but he's like Russell Wilson's like mental game coach when he's in Seattle. He worked with like Alabama, Florida, like US Army Special Operations, like a fuck ton of places, or a bunch of MLB organizations. And he's just talking about like coaches for the athletes. Like we're like the speed limit sign. It's like, hey, you're going 75. We got to bring you down to 65. Or hey, you're going 55. Like we got to be going 75. We're kind of there just to kind of we're guiding them, right? We're showing them what right to do and what not to do. Pretty much, it's just we're there as a guide, but ultimately it's the athlete that has to do it, and we're just going to give the feedback they need. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Corbin says, like the athletes drive the bus, or like I drive the bus. The athletes just tell me where to go.
Mm-hmm. So the time that I think Finney figured out, like he just can't, like he could, but the most out of me is to not just yell. It was freshman year, one of the first games that I played, and didn't like a call from home plate. Right, shocker, I struck out. Happened a lot, but strike out and I start fucking chirping, chirping this umpire. I'm like, bullshit, like that. As I'm walking back, blah, blah, blah. I was at home. And it was for the third out. And as I'm walking back, Finney just comes straight over from the third base box. You princess, prima donna, motherfucker, what do you think makes you will earn that call? And just cussing at me, just fucking dog me. Rightfully so. Rightfully so. Probably ball was like, probably a strike. Probably should have swung. You know, I probably had my ego hurt that it got called for strike three with two down kind of thing. And I'm, whatever. I was sitting there and I just went to, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Fucking maybe three innings later, same bullshit happens. I'm fucking, oh, you blah, blah, blah. And like, then not too long ago, like after that, then end up doing something stupid. And he like came over and he's like, what the fuck? And blah, blah, blah. Well, then the next day, as I'm walking by, he calls me over and he's like, what the fuck was that? And I like explained to him where my brain was at and like why I felt that way. And then he walked me through why I was wrong. And then that is what made me go, oh, like, if you, like, not able to explain to me why, like, I messed up, I'm not going to know why I messed up. And, like, that for me is that big thing of the difference of, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. He wasn't going to get out of me what he was wanting because I just shut down. I didn't figure out why I was wrong. And I'm going to probably make that same exact mistake again next time he explains to me why I was wrong. I never did it again. And, like, that's just that difference, right?
Yeah. And to flip it on the athlete side, too, right? Like, it's, you know, from a coach's perspective, everything we talked about makes a lot of sense. But, like, from an athlete's perspective, like, okay, I have a coach who's, like, maybe, you know, maybe he's a yeller, right? Like, you're in that type of situation. My coach just yells at me all the time. I don't really feel like it doesn't do anything for me, right? Like, I'm not responding well to that. I think a lot of athletes get intimidated to like have those conversations with a coach. And I think there's ways to go about having that conversation in like a respectful manner that's going to include or like promote some conversation between the two. But I think a lot of athletes kind of shy away from that conversation because it's like, well, it's a coach. Like, you know, I don't want to like disrespect it or anything. But I think a lot of coaches also at the same time, like they'll respond really well to, at least good coaches, they'll respond really well to an athlete coming up and being like, hey, I'm going to play better. I'm going to perform better if we can do something a little different, right? Or hey, you really got on me about, you know, dropping that pop. Like, what, I don't really understand why you're, you know, upset, or I don't really understand where I went wrong. Like, can you kind of help explain that to me? I think a lot of good coaches respond really well to that. But sometimes coaches need a reminder or they need that like feedback loop of just like, oh, maybe that didn't work as well as I thought it did, or maybe that response wasn't the right one. But when the athlete doesn't say anything, it takes a lot longer for that coach to kind of recognize it because he's going to do it over and over again until he kind of sees that it's not working. So it's a lot better for athletes just to be like, hey, I'm going to kind of head this thing off. I'm going to have that conversation and we're just going to talk about it. And that's going to be a lot more productive than just kind of hoping that something changes or just being like, ah, man, coach just hates me. It's like, well, maybe not. Like, if you talk to him, because if you talk to him and he goes, yeah, I just hate you. Like, that's one thing. But once again, like a good coach isn't going to do that.
Yeah. Oh, and I think it comes down to like, you know, I don't, you know, did he yell at you for taking strike three or did he yell at you for fucking bitching at the ump? Right, it's that's where the, you know, if you got a coach that's just cussing out for striking out or whatever, and it's like, okay, that's not okay. It's about the things you can control. Like, you can absolutely control not freaking out. You know, you don't freak out the ump. Maybe he goes, hey Reynolds, what happened there? He's like, I thought it was a ball. Okay, you know, if you're getting yelled at for not running hard, fucking run hard, right? Like little shit like that. It's all the controllables, and that, again, it's the good coaches do that, right? And it also is up to the player to fucking figure that shit out quick. It's like, okay, coach likes attitude and effort. That's what I'm going to give him, and I won't get yelled at, right? This and this is what he's looking for. I'm going to do my best to take care of that, and I won't get yelled at.
Well, Adam, this is why I think Finney is legit the best coach I've ever had. is that what's the goal at the end of the day as a team, right? Is to get as many wins as possible and is to become the best unit possible. If you're a coach that's not willing to figure out how can I get each individual one of these guys to their peak performance, that's going to is what can allow us as a unit to move forward. If I'm a coach and I can only be a yeller, well, it's going to work for the guys that can, you know, take in the yelling, but the others that aren't able to, I'm going to lose those guys. And if I'm a coach that can't be a yeller, the guys that need the yelling, they're not going to get the most out of themselves, and the guys that don't need the yelling are. And it's those coaches that are able to adjust and play to the strength of the individual, but then again, that takes wanting to build that relationship, that taking the time to build the relationship. Like, you can want to build one, but, and I mean, Bernsey, you know what coach I'm going to be talking about on this one. There are also going to be those coaches that just try and be something right away the moment they step in, and they're not going to take the time to build those relationships. And then as a player, you see straight through that shit. You see straight through that dude trying to be your fake friend or trying to be that fake hard-ass coach, and you're going to be able almost to like lose more respect for them quicker than if they were to just display like, hey, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I don't know. Did you guys see that clip of Daniels, the head coach for the Dolphins, where he walked over and he's like, hey, I fucked that one up. Like, that's my bad. Like, I will go to war for a coach if they came up to me and they like, hey, you did what I asked you to do. I fucked up by telling you to do that. I should have said this. I learned from my mistake. Let's go forward. It's like, hey, fuck yeah. Like, I love that shit. I can see straight through a dude that is lying. I can see straight through a dude that is trying to be fake with something. Do you know what I'm talking about, Burns?
Yeah, I do.
No, we're not saying names. But you know, you do right away. What year?
Sophomore year, right?
Yep.
I know who you're talking
about. It's such a fascinating part of human psychology is that, like, if you asked anybody and you were like, hey, would you rather have your leader, somebody leading you, tell you that they here's how to fix it, or would you rather have them pretend like they did make a mistake and just like move on? Like, would you lose respect for them if they thought everybody's going to be like, no, I'd rather have them just be like, yeah, I fucked up. Like, I'm going to, you know, fix it going forward. But then you put that exact same person in a leadership position and give them the opportunity to do that. And their brain immediately goes, well, if I say I made a mistake, they're not going to trust me anymore. But like, you gave them that moment, and your brain just doesn't register that. You know what I mean? Your brain just doesn't go there. And it takes practice to recognize those opportunities or kind of head off that thought of like that ego of like, I can't mess up because like people lose respect for me. And we coaches spend so much time studying hitting, studying pitching, like studying the physical performance, and not enough time talking about like, how do I get better as a leader? How do I just get better as like building humans? Because like the whole thing we've been talking about is just like, that is just as important. That will affect performance just as much.
I almost challenge that. Sorry, Burns, I'll quickly challenge. It's the same idea of like going through and not knowing how to make that adjustment. It's the same idea of just almost like being stuck in like your way only. Like, guys see that so much. What were you going to say, Burns?
Oh, no, I was just agreeing 100%. It's, yeah, no, like, I think, too, it's just, like, that leadership. And, like, the thing is, like, with Finney, too, was, like, you come off of this hard ass, and then I won't say the name, but, like, we had a guy who was, like, bad family, did not come from a lot, like, fucked up life, and ended up popping for cocaine. And, like, we were kind of like, oh, fuck, he's fucked.
Like, dead.
He stayed on. He redshirted. Finney got him into rehab and, like, kept him around. And we were just like, oh, shit. So, like, right that moment too, I was like, this is the guy. Like, this guy is a fuck. He's a great coach, but he's a good man. Like, he gives a fuck, you know? So, I think that it just comes down to that. Like, you know, it doesn't matter kind of how you convey the message or what type of coach you are, because there are streamers, there are more chill, you know. The basis of it and the core of it has to be like, I care about the people I'm with. I care about my players. And if you don't do that, you're just not going to be successful. You might have little stints here and there, right? But you will not have that long-term success.
If anybody couldn't tell, I completely lost my train of thought when I started speaking earlier, but I got it back. So, I want to challenge you. It's the same idea of, would you rather try and focus only forever on mechanics, or to sometimes just being a dog and competing in the box, having some timing, have a little direction? Like, I would rather have good timing, good direction, than good mechanics, no timing, no direction. I'd rather have a coach that is almost able to lead men more than have somebody that can only coach but can't lead. Like, if you're my coach, I would rather you be a leader, not necessarily know what the hell you're talking about. Or if you're probably a good leader, you're going to say like, hey, guys, I don't really know what I'm talking about on the mechanic side of shit, but like, this is what needs to get done. This, like, I would respect that dude more. Like, I would rather have the hitter that is always on time with good direction than the guy that always has perfect mechanics yet can't time up a fastball, doesn't have direction on and off speed, trying to go the other way. Like, I don't know. Do you guys see that at all?
It's the Ted Lasso principle. It's just like, good coaches are good coaches. You know, it doesn't matter. I was talking about like Max Garrett, who's the hitting trainer here at Driveline. And I would say like, Max Garrett could go to Japan tomorrow and coach a sumo wrestling team, and they would be the best team in the world. Not because he knows anything about sumo wrestling, but because Coach Gary's just a coach. Like, that dude just coaches. And good coaches are good coaches. Doesn't matter what you do or what you put them in. And then that's when it gets fun, is like, when you take a good coach like Gary and you give him the technical skills, like you get him to understand the mechanics, and like, he's doing all that stuff. And now he's like dangerous. You know what I mean? Like, that's when coaches get really good. But I think, like you said, like, oftentimes we just get so stuck on like, I gotta know everything about hitting. It's like, well, it helps, sure, but I'd much rather have you be on time with good direction than just be able to coach a swing. I'd much rather have you be just a good dude, good leader, good coach, than have you know everything about hitting.
Burns, did you ever take business ethics at Garden? With Coach, yeah. What was it, Coach Long?
Yeah.
Bro did not know shit about business, dog.
that was the easiest class I took in college, man. That shit was incredible.
Dude, that I was a soccer coach.
Yeah.
No fucking idea what was going on when it came to business. The dude was just an awesome dude, and it made like the really class a pleasure.
It was unbelievable.
It was so bad. I was like, that's the class,
professor. And that's the class you guys talk about. You know what I mean? Like, that's the class you guys talk about. That's the class you like walk away in your late 20s.
I remember his name. And
I learned a lot from that class. I might not have learned anything about business, but like, I learned a lot as a person in that class.
No, dude, we didn't do homework. Like, it was like not a real class. It was unbelievable.
Homie wore a tracksuit every day.
Dream, dude. Had the dream.
He was awesome.
Well, while we've kind of talked about being a good person and like kind of having an open mind and communicating well, I think it's a good transition into a little Twitter beef.
Yeah. Digesting the beef. We got a hot one today for the boys. We got a hot one. And some might say it could have possibly influenced JP's down the rabbit hole.
Ooh, could have. Maybe. We'll have to
see. So, for anybody that knows, Grit LLC, they're a big HLP, Richard Shank, Teacher Man, Snap the Barrel, big side on that. So, they put out a quote tweet of somebody, asking how they consider Mike Trout's bat going rearward. So he puts up four videos of essentially Mike Trout hitting just from side angles and stuff like that. A gentleman that's actually been on this podcast, if you guys were to scroll through, it was in the teens or 20s episodes. Matt Fritz, known as Sauce Hitting on Instagram, I believe. Big anti HLP stuff. And so he goes through and he tweets, LOL, Trout doesn't snap. He does nothing you teach, blind leading the blind, with the emoji twice. So I came in, and 2 years ago, one of my first YouTube videos I ever put out was essentially a video that's titled How to Get Bat Speed with Mike Trout, Cody Bellinger, Kristen Yelich, Manny Machado, and Bryce Harper. And I essentially just walk through the similarities that I see in their swings and at how they are similar at the same time. And I just put out a video, and essentially is a snapshot of Mike Trout starting his swing and his bat starting to bend a little bit. The only way, in my opinion, to necessarily get that, and this is why I say in the tweet, hard to make a wood bat bend like this without some type of sudden movement, snap, launch, getting to slot, whatever you want to call it. Going from a still move to hitting balls 100 plus with the shortest amount of reaction time possible isn't something that all swings are able to do, whatever you want to call it. Which, in my opinion, I don't know, where are you guys at with that? Initial responses.
I thought that was fine. I thought that, like, fair. Yeah, call it whatever you want, but the bat's got to move fast, very fast. Got to move fast, quick.
And so, if you want to call that a snap, if you want to call that a launch, if you, like, whatever you want to call it, it's got to do that.
A trigger.
The response that I received from MapFritz1307 is, it's nothing new, bro. Barrels have been turning for over 150 years with the emoji twice again. So I responded saying, didn't say it was new, just saying that it's something you called it. To you, it's turning the barrel. To them, it's snapping the barrel. Wild idea. What if they are physically the same thing and you guys just have different names for it? Tomato, tomato. Response is, if you think snapping the bat backwards at trigger is what Trout does, then I can't help you. Then he also had, there are two responses to, nope, different one, sorry. So I send a GIF of, oh, what's it called? Smeagol from Lord of the Rings saying, not listening, I'm not listening. He then responds with, I hear what you're saying, but what Trout does is not what Grit teaches. They are not physically the same. I'll help you a little bit. It's called a barrel dump. Not gonna lie, that's when that's when I got triggered. Because for me, it's like, okay, I've had you on my podcast. We've worked with similar folks, right? I don't need you to essentially big league me on saying, I'll help you a little bit. That frustrated me. And then to also go through and just call it the most simple, generic, it's called a barrel dump. Like, I've never fucking heard that in my life. Of playing Division I baseball. Don't have in my bio, but played Division I baseball. Played internationally in a really high level league. Don't have that in my bio. But, like, over the years of playing baseball at a high level for over 10 years, of being a coach that, and I'll get called Mr. Certified, certified with Rapsodo for baseball and softball, driveline youth development, blast motion, Longworth player development. I feel like I have some type of idea, kind of on the Twitter sphere a good amount. I feel like I know a lot of terms. So to kind of like go through and act like, and the thing also is a couple weeks ago, he commented again on one of Grit's posts and said, if only Blast Motion could track barrel dumping, which I responded with, they do. It's called early connection. Like, that's a real thing. So obviously I actually know barrel dumping, it seems like, to a pretty decent level to know exactly what metric is used on a specific top of the line sensor of how to check that. So I feel like I know what that is. So I respond, LOL, thanks, Mr. D1 Northwoods alum. Keep staying in the replies, talking shit to nobody, I guess, with the gif of the Simpsons old man yelling at clouds. Wow. So triggered. You could have just tweeted, or you could have just texted me. And we'll get back to how I feel about that. I said, just returning the same energy. I'll help you out. Then says the most basic thing. Come on, man. I came in saying, it seems like you guys are stuck on a simple word more than anything else. Every coach uses different cues, but I think we can all agree what a good swing looks like. You just stay in the replies. And if you guys were actually go to his page, literally all he does is reply to other people just talking shit, whether it's about politics, which that already annoys the living shit out of me, or if it's like this, just tweeting to reply to literally nobody, just the clouds, because Grit doesn't respond to this dude. I haven't seen many other people necessarily respond to him, yet he stays in the replies. I said, you stay in the replies, tweet after tweet, just disagreeing, and no one replies to you. But me trying to actually help you to get an understanding. It's wild, but if that's how you rock with your time, that's you. He said, like I said earlier, blind leading the blind. Now, this is where we're going to need to get a little bit more in-text context. This gentleman is a big believer in using staircases to do video assessments. So where does the head start in the stance? Where does the head get to at the swing? And essentially, all he does is draw staircases. Now, me personally, I don't think that that's how, like, that happens. I think there's something called, like, side bend and body tilt. That is why when my head starts here in my stance, and if that's a low pitch, I'm going to add a little bit more hinge. But from straight up, I start here, and I get to here, i.e. staircase. Now, tomato, tomato, how do we get the same results? I'm looking at it one way. He's looking at it a different way. It is what it is. But this is where the context comes in. I decided to choose this GIF. Now, were there other GIFs I could have chosen? Yeah. Was it still one of the top five that came up when you type in walking upstairs? Yeah. So, I mean, if the big red shoe fits, then the big red shoe fits. But I wasn't necessarily saying you're a clown. All I said was, keep rocking your stairs. Good luck. His response was, bro, you could have just texted me. You got my number instead of your tweeting clown gifts. Really get to a better understanding. Thanks for the help. Yeah, I could have texted you, but crazy thing, phones work two different ways. So when we initially, when I said, hey, like, here's me trying to help, you could have just shot me a text. Oh, dude, I'm just, you know, fucking with him, or just talking shit, like, blah, blah, blah. You could have texted me that, and I would have been like, hey, understand, content's the content. I get it. We're in the same game with it. But you didn't. You decided to essentially go through and big league me of, it's called this. I'll help you out a little bit. No. No. Fuck off. That annoyed me. Like, I respected you. Like, we're in the same game. We're in the same area. We work with the same athletes. At least last year we did when I was coaching out of high school and stuff. Like, I'm not talking shit of him of an instructor, but it's like, dude, I was just literally trying to help from the get-go. Like, you guys, in my opinion, and I think we could all agree, are essentially saying the same thing, turning the barrel and snapping the barrel. How you get there may be two different things, but at the end of the day, we're talking about the same video, the same swing, you calling it one thing, them calling another. Apparently, it's the same physical thing. I don't know. Your boy's thoughts.
That was so much.
That was a lot.
That was far. By far. Way too much to digest. I'll just take the road of, we were talking about it kind of before we got on. We are all using different verbiage to discuss hitting and trying to get guys in the same position. Hitting coaches, different programs, use different terms, but it's ultimately, we're all talking about the same thing. Just fucking stay in your lane. Focus on making your guys good. Don't worry about what everyone else is doing.
Wait, were you giving me advice or were you giving him advice?
I'm giving him advice.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
Worry about yourself. You got your guys. Make your guys good. That'll speak to your coaching ability. Fuck, man. I don't know. It's just, like, just wasted energy on stupid shit. Just so dumb. I hate it.
Burns, I love your takes on these. I love your takes on these.
Why do you need to comment on that video? Like, Christ.
Roll past it.
Yeah.
So why originally I was asking, were you giving me that advice? My all God leader, Jason Hirsch, walked in, so I was chatting with him. I didn't hear everything that you said, and so if you were talking to me, I was just going to ask you to repeat it. Not saying, well, like, are you talking to me? Not. I wasn't like, oh, how dare you. No, I just didn't fully hear what you said. Sorry.
You're still super toxic, and you need help. But
I agree with Burns. I agree with Burns all the time when it comes to the Twitter feed. Just keep scrolling. It's not worth it. Entertaining, yes. Marketing, sure. But like, if you're trying to like communicate information and somebody disagrees with you and you're trying to like have a discussion, it's probably not going to happen. And so like, just keep scrolling. Ignore it. It's fine. Focus on your dudes and make them better. But I'll take this a little different direction. I think like Bert said, it speaks to a little bit larger issue, in baseball, but really just in general right now, where people get fixated on one thing. We have this like target fixation on one thing, and that thing is the most important thing, and nothing else should be relevant. And whether we're talking about like the head movement in the stairs, or we're talking about the barrel turn or snapping it or whatever, we're focused on one thing and not looking at the holistic picture. Like in biomechanics, is talking a lot about this, about like single joint analysis. If I'm just looking at elbow flexion, I can draw a lot of correlations between elbow flexion and whatever other metric we're looking at. But that's not going to paint a clear picture about how the whole body's moving. That you can get to different points of elbow flexion a lot of different ways. In the same way that you can snap the barrel a lot of different ways. In the same way that you can move your head during the stride phase a lot of the different ways. And so I think it's the whole idea and the whole argument of like, well, that's not what Trout does and all this stuff. Like, it doesn't really matter because we're talking about one part. And even if that one part is true across the whole spectrum of things, or across every athlete, that one metric or that one point of interest is not going to give you a holistic view of how the hitter plays. And like I said, this applies to just like life too, right? If you're so fixated on one thing, that the ability to see a larger picture diminishes completely, then yeah, people are going to upset you. Because other people are not going to see the same thing you do. And it's going to be frustrating over and over again. Versus if we take a little bit, a step back, take a little bit more of a wide lens approach and try and see everything in the context of how the whole works instead of one specific part and then drawing conclusions from there. So look at the whole picture and see if that one conclusion can now allow us to gain bigger insight into the whole thing. Instead of starting with the one thing and holding on to it forever.
drop some knowledge.
Oh yeah, that's I don't know. That always frustrates me. That's why I hate hitting Twitter, because it's just like these sound bites of just like, well, this is the move, or like, this is how everyone should train. It's like, well, you can't say that. Like, there's so few like universal truths in the world, and there's even fewer in baseball.
Oh no.
Oh, did we lose me?
You're back.
We got none of that.
This is the second time. I don't know if you saw the first one. The first time me and Burns were both going.
Oh god.
But that time it came like 95% of it came out, 90-ish. That time was like maybe 10. Maybe 10.
All right. The internet said it wasn't that.
I was going to say, I'm leaving this in because I think it's funny. Especially both me and Burns at the same time. Is just.
Oh, gotta love technology. Anyway.
What's your famous saying about technology there, JP?
Technology works when you need it, when you don't need it, and it stops working when you need it.
Bingo. No surprise. No, yeah, I was pretty frustrated. Like I said, I then, a few hours later, tweeted, people act like they don't understand marketing tactics. It's like, that's what that was for Grit. Like, and Richard Shank's entire Twitter, marketing. 108 Performance, entire Twitter, marketing. Sorry, JP, love you. Drive Lines. All of their Twitter marketing. 75% of what I tweet, marketing. The other 25% is me trying to help my athletes. I would say the other 20% is me trying to help my athletes get to colleges, and the other 5% is this beef. But like, most of it, marketing. Like, that's what, you know, a lot of this shit is. And when it started to change from a marketing tool to something else, in my opinion, that's when it was like, all right, like, we're not talking about coaching. We're not talking about marketing. Like, right now we are essentially talking about, I don't know, me personally feeling like, you know, Mr. D1 Northwoods was trying to explain elementary shit to me when I'm not in elementary school. So, for me, that was the frustration part. But like I had mentioned earlier, somebody else has a segment down here below. Mr. JP Fashone has going down the rabbit hole. And what's this week's topic?
So this week we're going to talk about snapping it. just kidding. We're going to talk about the way that the bat moves at your launch, or at your trigger, or at when you start, your first move, when you land, your load position, your launch position, whatever you want to call it. When the bat starts going from behind to the baseball. And so when we're looking at,
when you say behind, can you be a little bit more specific?
That's a great point. So what we're going to start by talking about is, how do we define behind? How do we define rearward movement? What does that mean? What is that relative to? Because if we've learned anything what I hope we've learned in talking about biomechanics is that definitions are everything. How we define things is critical to actually gaining insight into those research topics. So when we talk about rearward movement, we have to think about what that's relative to. Rearward to what, right? And so what I want to start by talking about is just strictly bats. Okay, so we're talking about rearward movement in the, what fancy term would be, the global coordinate system. So we're talking about relative to the ground, okay? So we're going to look at our bat speed graph from our motion capture report. We have three different vectors that the bat moves in. It's going to move in the X direction, which is towards the pitcher. It's going to move in the Y direction, which is towards the pole side foul line. And then it's going to move in the Z direction. It's going to move up and down. Right? And so we're taking the total bat speed. We're chopping it up into those three parts. And then we're looking at how each part interacts and the timing. I don't want to look as much at the actual lines. And what I want to look at instead is the shaded regions. So these shaded regions are high bat speed guys. So 72 miles an hour plus in our lab is this shaded region. So it's taking the average of all those guys. And when we talk about rearward movement, and correct me if I'm wrong here, when we talk about snapping the barrel, right, we're talking about snapping it this way, correct?
No.
We're talking about this way.
Pronation, supination with the wrist.
Okay. So it's going towards the pitcher and like moving towards the pull side. Okay. So that would be the,
from my, Mr. Certification courses and understanding of everything else.
Okay. All right. Okay. We'll take your word for it. I'm sure somebody will tweet at you if you're wrong. So we're looking at the Y direction, right? If we're talking about like, top hand pronation, supination, We're talking about the wrist moving from a kind of neutral position into a more supinated position. So the barrel's going to work around the body, essentially towards the plate. So we're looking at the Y direction, which is going to be bat speed heading towards the pole side. But we have to think about where the barrel's at. So when we first start that move towards or start that snap, we're going to be moving that barrel away from our body and away from the pole side. So that Y direction is now going to be negative because it's away from the pole side. And you can see that Y direction line starting off pretty flat, right? So we don't have a lot of speed in the Y direction. What we do see is a lot of speed in the X direction and a lot of speed in the Z direction to start. When we think about how guys hold the bat, typically the barrel is kind of above the knob. And as they start to slot or start to turn the barrel behind them, they're going to get that barrel to move back to a little bit more parallel position with the ground as they kind of start their swing. So that's where we see that kind of peak as the bat starts to move in the Z direction. So it's going to go down towards the ground. The barrel is going to go closer to the ground. And then it's going to start to move in the X direction as the body starts to rotate towards the pitcher. What we don't see is that Z direction releases quickly. So the bat's going to move backwards towards the ground. It's going to start to move away from the pitcher. So that's probably where we're seeing a little bit of that like rearward snap or that backwards movement. It's the bat moving towards the catcher as it starts the arc around the body. So it's not necessarily that pronation and supination in the Y direction. It's more the bat moving towards the catcher as it begins the arc around the body. Clear? Good?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Shut up, Siri. Okay, so this is just talking about bat speed, right? We, like I said, definitions are everything. So we're talking about definitions in the global plane. And we're talking about the speed at which that's moving. We're talking about the direction of the location. So what I'll pull up now is a visual 3D. We good? You see this?
Yes, sir.
Good? Okay. So we're going to look at skeletons, as we often do. And we're going to look at bat Y and bat X as a function of a joint angle. So we're looking at the bat angle, not the bat speed. So bat X is going to be, let me pull up my notes, make sure I got this right. Bat X is going to be rotating around the spine towards the pole side. So it's the angle of the bat as it rotates around to the pole side. And the zero for this is going to be the knob of the bat pointing towards the catcher and the end of the bat pointing towards the pitcher. So essentially like backwards, so you can think like a big bat wrap around the head. And then as it kind of unfolds, that bat X starts to get more positive. And then we're gonna look at bat Y, which is the vertical position of the bat. So you can think about like kind of vertical bat angle essentially, where zero is the bat pointing straight up and down and the knob of the bat pointing downwards and the end of the bat up. So that is our zero point. When we take a look at this athlete's swing, now granted this is one athlete, but I think overall this is a pretty typical trend. Most guys don't move the bat crazy different, especially at the start, unless they're really bad. So when we start to see this athlete turn the barrel or get slotted or snap it, we're going to see that bat X start to take off in the positive direction a little bit earlier. So that means that the barrel is starting to work around. So that barrel is starting to point more towards the pitcher than it is pointing out kind of behind their head. So that's kind of, once again, that rearward movement relative to the ground. And then the Y direction starts to take over, where now the bat starts to work more vertically, barrel starting to go back towards the catcher as he makes that turn. So when we think about the context of everything, once again, we've talked about, okay, the bat speed. We've talked about the bat angles. Now we have to look at, okay, what is this relative to when we look in terms of the body, right? The body, the athlete, that's the guy that's actually moving the bat. So we're going to take a look at the angle between the torso and the bat. So when we look at the torso angle X, that's going to be the angle between the spine and your angle kind of moving around. So parallel would be the bat perpendicular, or zero would be the bat perpendicular with, or sorry, parallel with your shoulders would be kind of our zero point. And Y is going to be kind of your typical blast early connection or connection measurement. And then Z we can kind of ignore because that's axial rotation of the bat and the spine. So we're not too worried about that. But what we're going to see is that first initial move, we're going to kind of see the same trend. The bat angle X starts to adjust a lot quicker as that bat Y starts, or excuse me, the bat Y is going to drop a lot quicker as the bat X remains consistent. So relative to the spine, this is the first time that we're seeing the bat actually move backwards or kind of towards the ground behind us before it starts to move around our body. So it's kind of a transition between the two.
Real quick, JP.
I didn't get that.
Not you.
You didn't understand either.
I think that a little more explanation on why, not why, but W-H-Y, why
okay.
Z isn't necessarily, you mentioned that that's something that we don't necessarily have to look at in this. I think that there might be from the other side of the snapping and stuff, I think that they might look at the thought of that dumping of the shoulder is kind of connected to the barrel dumping as well, as that barrel is getting, you know, too rearward, that would then cause early, you know, connection. Can that then be caused by an early, like, guy that drops that back shoulder? Is that what Z is looking at? Or from what I am interpreting, Z is essentially the, like, hinge or body tilt or side bend. Is that what that's referring to?
Yeah, let me double check my notes before I answer that to make sure I'm 100%.
This is why we pay you the big bucks.
This is why we pay the biomechanist the big bucks. Okay, so Z is the axial rotation of the bat. So you can imagine like spinning the bat between your hands where the bat's not actually moving anywhere. But let's say like the label of the bat where it says like Louisville Slugger is like rotating around in
a okay circle.
So I guess not necessarily anything relative to the body, it's just the bat actually turning in place versus what I think we're talking about when we talk about the kind of early side bend or guys kind of dumping back and then the barrel kind of coming late. What we're looking at there would probably be a combination of bat torso Y and bat torso X, where as the torso starts to move backwards, you're going to see that that early connection or that bat torso Y start to increase because relative to the spine, that angle is increasing. So let's say, for example, let's hold the bat at like 90 degrees to our spine. Let's keep the bat exactly where it is, and let's just dump our back shoulder. Right? Okay, keep the bat exactly where it is. I see what I'm talking about. My body's going to move, but the bat's not going to move.
Oh.
Yeah. You can kind of see how that angle between the bat and our spine now changes, right? The bat's not moving, but because our spine is moving and everything's measured relative to the spine, or at least in this case, it's relative to the spine, that angle is now changing.
So Z is not then looking at that. It's like you said earlier, looking at the rotation of the bat.
Correct.
All right. So just for any of the people that might be possibly asking questions in the comments, in my head, I feel like that would have been something that they would have then like jumped at, naysayers and stuff like that. Out of curiosity, do you see this?
I do, yes.
Okay.
I did see that. Wow. As a teacher, I thought that when somebody raised their hands, don't answer it right away. Wait till you get it to a breaking point and then come back.
No, 100%. I was just double checking to see if like you could see that, because I could see it, but I didn't know if you guys could. Beautiful. Anytime that moving forward, if I have a possible thing, finish your thing, but that's how I'll kind of represent. I have a question from right there.
Definitely. Well, I think the easiest way to talk about bat torso, why, and this might be a better way to explain it. Apologies for all the Apple Podcasts listeners.
Go to YouTube.
So he, when this athlete starts, he starts with the bat like really laid back, where the barrel is almost pointing at the ground. That's kind of his starting position. And when we look at bat torso Y, that angle is pretty small, right? Which kind of makes sense. The angle kind of between the spine and the bat here is going to be pretty small. As that bat starts to go up towards the sky, as he kind of gets ready to go swing, starts in his load phase, you can see that angle drop off, or kind of what I would say increase, because they're both negative. So it's getting more negative, or the angle's increasing. So he gets to kind of right around 90, somewhere in there, where it's a little bit more parallel to the ground. But we can also see his spine starts to go forward, right? He starts to forward bend at the same time. And when he starts to forward bend, you can see that bat torso start to change as well. And so that's where we kind of get the distinction between the two. And then when he starts to make that turn, as the barrel releases around him, we can see that bat angle X actually increase quite rapidly. So bat angle X is measuring kind of the barrel working around his spine, versus bat Y is working more. You can kind of think like the traditional, like dump the barrel behind you. Or if you were like throwing a hammer over your shoulder, that would be the same kind of movement.
Kind of like Donaldson.
Yeah. 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 Good example. Big barrel, kind of hand pump forward and then the barrel coming back. That's kind of what we're looking at. And all of this to say, and kind of the thesis statement for all of this, understanding human movement and understanding how the bat moves through space is very complicated. It is very complicated because how you measure it, what is it relative to, the system that you're using to measure it, the different movements of the body, right? Is the torso moving or is the bat moving? What's actually happening? Gets really granular and really complicated. And so to just say like rear word movement doesn't have a lot of value because of the lack of context, not to say that it's wrong, but to say that it needs more explanation, because everything has to have a really strict definition before we can actually analyze whether it's accuracy or not. Before we can kind of gain any insight to a statement, a theory, an idea, we have to be really good about defining our terms.
And is that why you are such a biomechanical kind of person? Is just the everything has a definition, everything is consistent kind of idea?
Yeah, it's why I get the same frustration that Burns gets with Twitter and like using different words to say the same thing. It's why I think that there's an epidemic of like pseudoscience in hitting, where we seem to be doing experiments and people seem to have data to back up theories, but without strict definitions, you're not really doing science. We're more just like spitballing and calling it art. And that's it's a detriment to I think the baseball community as a whole, and it's a detriment to just like our intellectual principles and intellectual honesty when we're putting stuff out that isn't really science and claiming that it's fact.
Preacher. I agree, JP. Well, I think too, it's like the context of it too is like in terms of the body and how it moves, it's like guys are different. Guys have different strength. You know, some guys will have a shit ton more hip IR than others, you know?
Yeah.
And then vice versa, right? Like there's so many different variables that happen in the swing with different guys. Like you can't, like, this is how you do it. Because Aaron Judge hits, you try that or somebody else, it might not work, right? The way Mookie Betts hits, it might not work for some. You know what I mean? Like you've got to have so much more context. There's got to be so much more information.
Yeah. Which is why the ultimate question is just like, I don't care what he hits like. Does he hit good?
Exactly.
Does he hit good? Cool. If he doesn't, then I don't really care whether he does like the move or whether he trains a certain way. Like, I don't care if he's super into variable training and like only hits high velo machines. Like, if he sucks, then he sucks. Like, what are we talking about?
They don't ask how, they ask how many.
Not wrong. I had, I think like what you said at the beginning of your definition of rearward, I think everything is perspective, right? And so, like you said, until we define rearward to what, we then don't know what rearward is. Like, if you don't know what's forward, you don't know what's back. If you don't know what's down, you don't know what's up. If you don't know what's left, you don't know what's right. I had put out a tweet that said, hey, swing down, and then immediately followed up with another tweet that said, hey, swing up. And that's like, I don't know, like for the longest time I remember being you swing up, but like when? Like at some point my bat starts even, like my hands are even with my ears, but then my barrel has got to go down to the ball at my knees. Like that's swinging down, but then from there I'm swinging from my knees to then swinging up, so that's swinging up. And then if you were to look at those swings, the skeletons from straight down, the bat goes backwards. Like at some point, we go from the knob facing as a right-handed hitter, at some point from the knob going to first base and the barrel going to third, that knob is going to have to point at the pitcher and the barrel is going to have to point at the catcher. Now, to me, that is it going rearward. To somebody else, that is this definition. To somebody else, that's this definition. And then I think barrel dumping is defined by the increase of the bicep and forearm relationship. Like the more that I go this way, if it's behind me, that is me getting a barrel dump, not the fact that my barrel is going towards the catcher. But then the same idea is you also don't want to be too tight, because now we're possibly getting too much of a handsy swing. So like there's always something to something else, but until you're defining what is the first thing, you can't then define the second thing. And I think, like you said, we get so many snippets, so many snapshots, so many just quick little vines of, you know, what hitting is supposed to be. And then you're missing that context. A long time ago, JP and I went over a video of this instructor talking about, oh, I talked to all these MLB scouts and, you know, all of them said that they don't care about exit velo and metrics don't matter and blah, blah, blah. And then she came up with a follow-on after, you know, JP and I did our thing. Go check out that previous podcast. And then she defined, like, there has to be context with what she was referring to. Scouts talking about the top percent of recruits where, you know, the difference of a 105 ball versus, you know, 99, not too big of a difference in the context of everything else. And so, like, that's what I think it's missing. And it's frustrating for us not to have just a ground set rules. But that's when everybody has different perspectives. Everybody, if I'm looking from this angle, that way is down, that way is up, If I flip my head around, it's the other way. Yet we're looking at the same directions. And I think that's the beauty of what we do, because so many different athletes have so many different perspectives, as what we were first talking about at the very beginning. And so there has to be coaches that teach swing down. There has to be coaches that teach swing up, because for one athlete, that's going to make more sense than that way. Yet we get the same result. Like I said in one of my tweets, you know, we can all put up a video of Mike Trout and say, that's a good swing. Then it's deciding what makes it a good swing. Then it's deciding what are the definitions. Then it's deciding what are the parameters that we're setting for that.
Yeah. Yeah, and going back to what we talked about before, it's just like a lot of it's marketing, and realistically, if you scroll through somebody's Twitter, you have no idea what they coach like, you know. And like you said, like Driveline's the same way. Like it's a lot of it's marketing, a lot of it's, you know, trying to put out information, but like, you know, Twitter keeps everything short, right? The amount of characters you have is just not enough to explain the context of everything. But like, you walk into our facility, like I've had days where it's like I'll do a swing design with one kid and I'm teaching him how to kick back, and the next kid rolls in and we're doing, you know, teacher man drills, and like I'm trying to get him to just hang on his back leg and just like fire from there. And it's not because one's right and one's wrong, it's because that's what the athlete needed. Like that's what I think is going to get them to hit the ball good.
Yep. 100%.
Nice. That's good radio. Well, and like, I mean, just like you said, you only have so many characters. You only have so many things. I'm looking at the original post of what this was about. And I mean, I think we can all agree, Mike Trout's swing, beautiful, sexy. We love it. Mwah. It's the content we're dying for, right? This first video, and Twitter has it to where it shows how many views each different video gets if there are multiple videos. The first video, 9,700 views currently as we were speaking. The last video only has less than 1,500 views. So, like, in just that quick little short stint, people, and these video 8 seconds long, 7 seconds long, 2 seconds long, 6 seconds long. Like, it's not like these are, you know, 5-minute videos that people aren't sticking around for. It's just a couple of extra seconds, and yet people aren't even willing to stay till the fourth Mike Trout video of him hitting a home run. Like, they're not going to stick around for tweet 6 in a 15-tweet thread unless they're really into it. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, gotta love social media. It's one of those where it's like, you gotta love it because of its good, and then you kind of hate it because of its bad. But like, that's the beauty of it, baby.
Gotta take them both.
Well, shit, boys. We got anything else on the craniums? Anything?
Not chilling.
I benched 225 for 2 reps this week, so I'm pretty fired up.
Hey, let's go, big boy.
Forgot to mention that at the top. Pretty excited about it. I'm getting jacked up.
Body coming through.
Did you do Aeneas's trick?
I don't know what the fuck that is.
What's up?
Didn't do that.
Every single rep, baby. What's up? A lot of garden talk today.
A lot of garden talk. Jesus Christ.
I love it. I love
it. Turn the year.
Well, fuck yeah, dude. No, that's awesome. Now you know what you did, right? We just found what your segment is.
Lifting with Burns.
Little friends. Lifting with Burns and foodie with Burns. Bro, let's just make it to where, like, you're just throwing together what's some shit that we can cook up. Your boy actually has looked at my last 2 month bank statements. I hit up Costco yesterday. We are not eating out anymore. Been dropping close to like $15 to $35 almost a day on fast food. Yeah, no, not great. Not great. So we're going to be making our own little meals. I got some shredded chicken. Got some steaks, going to be grilling those up. But shoot, Bernsey, if you want to put together a little thing where you could throw out like a decent meal, like how much protein, what the cost of it would be, or something like that, like, dude, I'd be down with it.
You got to convert it from Canada coins, though.
You monopoly money boys.
All right.
Let us know in the comments. Let us know if you guys would be interested in a little Burns talking lifting, a little Burns talking some good food. But outside of that, we're good here from Fast. Fast underscore RBI. If you guys are needing anything, JP, you got anything?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter. Follow me on Instagram. Now stuff a little bit more often.
Hey, baby. Where is he?
Follow me on both of the socials, please. And I will market to you.
All right, everybody. Thank you guys so much for joining HitChat Group Chat for this week. We will see you guys next week.